I'd like to welcome Chef Angelo Sosa to both Australia and to my series of informal chats on my LBV website. Firstly, Angelo, can you tell us what brings you to Australia?
Sure, of course. Happy to be here. First time in Australia, in Sydney. I'm doing a campaign with GLAD, Cling Wrap, and talking about preservation and the importance of storage.
This part of the storage, sort of the byproduct of it, is that we can actually save food. Because we were talking about food wastage, and incredible statistic that because of bad storage, we're wasting up to, I think a figure was mentioned, of 20%.
It's 20% of Australian, the purchase of food goes to waste, which is extremely high, and that's approximately, call it one out of every five bags goes to waste.
And I guess from a chef's point of view in the kitchen, I mean, you guys really are sort of, you maximise storage to an absolute degree, whether it be sous vide techniques or what you have in your cool room. So, I mean, you guys really lead the forefront in utilising storage, products.
Sure. I mean, I think people overlook storage. Storage is the most critical thing because it's preservation of the ingredient and it optimises its freshness. So that's really important.
We were talking earlier about Alain Ducasse, and he took a particular interest in your food, which is amazing given he's such a legend and the weight behind his cuisine. Can you tell us how that happened and what that means to you as a chef?
Sure. Well, Chef Ducasse is really, he's a genius, he's a mentor, and I truly look up to him. He's a man of integrity and simplicity and respect. He quote-unquote scouted me in New York City and invited me to go to France and work along with him in his restaurants, and it was just an eye-opening experience to be a part of his, you know, to see his Monte Carlo, the Louis Kahn's, and to go to Paris and see his operations is just impeccable and inspiring.
It's quite interesting because Milan is a very traditional chef, and your combinations are quite daring, and you do push the boundaries a lot, so it's quite an interesting relationship there. How did that work?
Sure. Monsieur Ducasse is definitely a visionary. He sees, in fact, I would even say what he did at his namesake restaurant, Louis Kahn's. He pushed the boundaries as well during that time. He wanted to serve Mediterranean cuisine, Mediterranean, you know, vegetable-driven cuisine in France. You know, that's pretty, you know, pioneering, trend-setting at that time. So I think, you know, me being a little bit more modern and my flavor profiles being a little bit more abstract, I think he took a liking to that, seeing that he is, he is somewhat traditional, but has definitely respects, somebody who's talented.
Mm. Can you tell us a little bit about your cookbook, Flavor Exposed? Mm-hmm. I haven't actually seen the cookbook myself, but I noticed on your site there. Can you tell us the foundation of the book and what the message you're trying to get across in that book?
Sure. So Flavor Exposed is my first cookbook. There's nine different chapters, and each chapter is broken up into a flavor profile: sweet, sour, salty, bitter, umami. And within each chapter, there's a short story of my life that made me, told a story about, where I am today. So the sweet story is about my Tia Carmen and my inspiration to cooking. Then within each chapter, in the sweet chapter, there's sweet recipes. In the bitter chapter, there's bitter recipes. So the premise of the book is that my cuisine is based upon flavor profiles. And a great analogy would be in Asian cooking, you have sweet, sour, salty, of how there's always a trinity in any dish that I create. And it's not always sweet, sour, salty. It could be bitter, sweet, spicy. It could be smoky, bitter, sweet. So there's always a trinity working harmoniously to achieve that end all
view. That I found with the really exceptional chefs, that gift of balance of flavor, it is the grail. I mean, it's the thing, as you refer to it, as the trinity that brings it all together. And you have that many combinations in your food. I mean, is that an intuitive thing, or can that be learnt? Or
Well, first and foremost, I think that any flavors that exist could always be balanced together, and I think you hit it right on the head. It's always a balancing act in cooking, and I truly encourage the act of experimentation and perseverance. So when you experiment and things don't go according to a plan, I definitely encourage persevering, through that. So your second question was, could that be taught? I think just, being experienced and being around that environment, I believe that can be taught.
And I guess not being afraid to fail too, because, I mean...
100%.
Yeah, because a lot of cooking shows on television, I mean, they do project everything's 100% on the time, but I mean, some of the great lessons I learned through failure.
Sure, 100%.
Can you tell us how your dishes are influenced by your travel experiences, and can you give us a few examples?
Sure. I mean, my dishes are stories of my traveling. Because the way that I look at cuisine in itself and food is, we use the word fusion. So the word fusion for me is, fusion has to do with connectivity and relationships. And whether a dish is fusion, that just means that more chefs are talking, and more chefs are traveling, and more chefs are in relationships with people, with farmers, with... And that's what I love about fusion. So there's a dish from Vietnam. It's called Chuc A La Vong. It's the dish is derived in Hanoi. And it's a restaurant that's existed over 200 years. So I took that dish, Chuc A La Vong. I, quote-unquote, fused it or infused it and was very inspired. And I... it's a dish with a turmeric-based fish that's soaked in turmeric fish sauce, seared. And they serve it with dill, like the dill gods came down and put mounds of dill on it. So I've taken that to the next level, and in fact, I serve it not only with sriracha, which I love sriracha, but I serve it with white chocolate. And why that works is white chocolate, it's sweet, but the sweetness puts the fish sauce into balance. So you have the saltiness of the fish, fish sauce, then the sweetness of the chocolate, but then the viscosity of the white chocolate is the butter, adds butter notes to the fish. So you take a lean fish, and the viscosity of the chocolate makes it really buttery.
That's quite fascinating, actually.
Yeah.
You've used your profile in a very positive way in respect to charities. Can you tell us some charities that that you've supported and what they've meant to you?
Sure. Well, there's two charities I'm super passionate about. It's called Send Me on Vacation, and that's a breast cancer-based charity. And because I think for me it's very important to be outward-focused to the world. I think the essence of living is really giving, and being outward-focused and focusing on these charities is really just amazing for me. So it's called Send Me on Vacation, and what we do is we send cancer survivors after their chemo, we send them on vacation.
Fantastic.
And then every... my sister was recently diagnosed with breast cancer, so looking to enroll her and send her on vacation and her family. So this year our goal is to send women or cancer survivors on vacation 365 days a year.
That's absolutely brilliant. Hopefully that's something we could look at in Australia, because, I mean, that's a brilliant concept.
Yes, yes. And it's powerful
concept.
Because, my sister was diagnosed with cancer, my father was diagnosed with cancer, so a lot of people could resonate with that.
How's your sister traveling now as far as that?
The chemos are going well, and just having that support, because, with the cancer, obviously it's an emotional drain, so imagine just going on this vacation and just feeling peace and relaxation from all of that trauma.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Culinary Institute of America, it's quite iconic, and it's very respected worldwide. And can you tell us about your experience there and what skill set it gave you to embark upon your career?
Sure. I mean, the Culinary Institute of America, for me, it's the greatest university. I think it's the Harvard of culinary schools. Just the level of focus and a level of attention to the education is just paramount. It's just they're on top of, they're really trendsetters of education and always just forward thinking. Just staying ahead of that curve, I think, is so critical to the education.
How long did you spend in that program?
3 years. I was there for 3 years. Yeah.
Amazing. And some incredible chefs in America have been a byproduct of that institution.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about your childhood in Connecticut? Because that's obviously shaped and influenced your love of food. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. So I grew up in a very big family. With my parents, there's 9 of us total. And I grew up in the country, literally right next to, cornfields. But my father was all about sustaining for the home, so we had a really big garden. So that country life was a very humble life, and I really learned to appreciate people, learned to appreciate the earth, and learned to have respect for that. So I think really growing up in that country setting and that smaller town was really paramount, and allows me to really be humbled by just, where I'm at in my life today, and just know that there's always a starting point for it.
I was reading about the very simple things that you had in your childhood, like fishing and things like, your father would apparently had a garden, and he was quite passionate about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think just having that respect for food right from an early age was just so so important. And my father was all, my parents were always about educating us to eat. And for example, Sundays was our day to try wine. So my father was always adamant about having a sip of wine, whether we liked it or not wasn't the point, but to educate us and open our mind and palate was critical.
Top Chef is how in Australia we've actually learnt about you. You're in Series 7, and obviously was a seminal point in launching your career. Can you talk about the process and what you took away from the experience?
I'll say Top Chef was one of the greatest and one of the most difficult experiences of my life. It taught me to trust in myself. What it did was it pushed me to my limits, and I mean that in a good way. It broke me from my comfort zone and made me see the new version of Angelo, and really allowed me to come, to shed the past and grow into who I am today. So
you adopted a very high risk strategy on Top Chef. I mean, your combinations were very daring, and we were talking earlier about the contrast in judging styles. Can you talk a little bit about that and how, as a contestant, you adapted to that, or you just
sure? Yeah. Sure. I think the bottom line in life, feedback is the most important thing, whether you like it or not. The feedback is just so critical, because the feedback allows us to hear, get the honesty, and to grow from there. So I think I had a choice in that, and I wanted to, I wanted to learn, I wanted to grow. Top Chef was about me, my own education, investing in myself and investing in my growth. So I took that feedback very seriously.
Red, initially you were a bit hesitant to go on the program initially. is that true?
Good questions. Yeah, I think the show for me, I was hesitant, not for the sake that I didn't like the show or didn't want to be on the show. I didn't know at that point in my career. I had restaurants. I will say the value of it at that point in time. But what I realized is it was very valuable, and competing against those chefs was brilliant, and getting honest feedback was amazing, and really just honed in on, really just brought me to the point where I am today.
One of the challenges on the show was actually creating a dish which was going to go to the International Space Station. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that dish a little earlier. Can you tell us a bit about that and the challenge of that?
Sure. So this was the NASA episode where we had to literally recreate a dish that was going to, quote unquote, send us to orbit, or that would be a dish out of this world. I mean, this was a dish that was going to get us into the semifinals and finals into Singapore. So I went for broke, and I created a dish. It was a ginger lacquered short rib. I believe it had a pea puree with wasabi, and had a multitude of ingredients. And I went for it. I went for the fences, and that was the point of the dish, and the judges loved it, and allowed me to go on to compete in Singapore.
One of the judges, no less, was Buzz Aldrin, so he'd know a bit about space, and that dish has actually got up to the space station?
Yes. The dish has been up in orbit, and the feedback was that they appreciate the fact that I did use some spices, and they, instead of just some generic flavors. So.
Can you talk about the pressure, but also the rush of cooking in the competitive New York food scene?
Sure. New York City food scene is premier. It's really where the best, the best shine. And it was just, it's just amazing to be a part of the New York food scene. It definitely has its challenges. And I think it just goes back to taking feedback, being open to feedback, hearing constructive feedback, and the bottom line is, what are you gonna do with that? So I think myself and my team are just very open and responsive to that feedback, from guests to reviewers to whatever it is, just to be successful.
Can you tell us the expectations of the New York food diner?
New York food diner is extremely educated. Their palates are extremely advanced. I would say that, one, first and foremost, they're very open. They're very educated, and their palates are very educated and well-traveled. So they know you definitely don't want to, quote-unquote, try to hide something from them. They know exactly what you're doing.
And when you open a restaurant there, obviously you open yourself up to a lot of food critique. And
yes,
You've got some of the hardest critics in the world are based in New York, so that must be an interesting experience as well.
Sure. I mean, the criticism in itself, there's no room to breathe. You have to stay on top of your game, and you always have to be creating, and that's really important, that new moments are new possibilities, and that we're constantly creating.
Are you involved in any restaurants currently at the moment?
Other than
Your current restaurants you're involved with?
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. We have the two restaurants in New York. They're it's the same concept. We have they're called Añejo. One of them is located on Hell's Kitchen, 47th and 10th Avenue, and the other one we just opened about 3 months ago is Añejo Tribeca, right below Soho. And the restaurants, you know, have been a blessing for us. And the one in Tribeca is a little bit more modern than the one on Hell's Kitchen. Hell's Kitchen is more of a cantina, more home-style cooking, where the one downtown is much more modern.
Can we talk about, just quickly talk about sandwiches to the New York food culture? Because that's quite interesting. When I was doing some research for this interview, and you actually had a dedicated sandwich shop there. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, I used to have a sandwich shop called Xie Xie, which means thank you in Mandarin. And it was the atypical sandwich shop. It was all about, you know, the concept was literally almost right off the beaten path of, Times Square. And the whole concept was, instead of staying in your office, why not create an environment? Not only could you have a sandwich at a low price point, but a cool environment. Environment that had great music, that had a certain design element, and that offered cool drinks as well.
After Top Chef and everything that's transpired subsequent to that, how hard is it to maintain a proper perspective? Because I've noticed just today you do seem very grounded, and that's refreshing from our point of view. But can you tell us how difficult that is? Because it must be difficult.
I think that's a great question. The question is just being grounded. I think the bottom line is. I have a vision for my life. I think me being grounded is me feeling blessed. I'm truly blessed of where I'm at, and I'm grateful that I'm here in Australia, and I'm grateful for what I have in my life. But I have a vision for my life, and I think you have to be grateful and gracious for what you have. And in my vision, I have very clear intentions of where I want to go. And I think it's important to build a strong network of people, have a strong team, but have good people as support around you to get you to your end all vision.
Because it is there, it's quite a privileged position you're in. Because you, as we were just talking earlier about charity, that you can give weight to something that's very important, and you know, and it will draw attention to it.
Sure, 100%. Yeah, as I said, I think the essence of life is giving.
That's a good point. There's quite a few Asian influences in your food, and you're quite renowned for a banh mi that. That even captured Alain Ducasse's attention. Can you tell us a bit about where those Asian influences came through?
Sure. So I work for a chef named Jean-Georges. He was the first chef to really bring over or pioneer the fusion of French-Asian cooking to America. I spent a lot of time in Thailand, Vietnam, Hong Kong, Korea, Singapore, Malaysia. So really just embodying the culture, showing respect to the culture, and embodying, you got the word.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The flavors, and recreating them in my own mind.
How would you best describe your style of food? Because it is quite interesting, and it's quite unique, which is a good thing too. Because I mean, it doesn't appear to be an imitation of anything. No. It's very authentic.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, my food is based upon my travels of my life and my travels, and the fusion of ideas and people. And it's that story. The food is the conduit to the story. The story of family, the story of my travels, the story of the past, and how the most important thing for me is the past evolves. And the past has that story, and the past has tradition, and that tradition should evolve. So that's very important for me to, when I go travels, to respect, to understand the culture, to show respect to the culture, and adapt to the culture, but then interpret that into my own life.
I noticed on your website you do use that exactly what you described there, past, present, future.
Correct.
And that's a philosophy you obviously live by.
Correct, yes.
Can we talk about some of the chefs that have inspired you?
Sure. My tia Carmen was my Dominican aunt, and I think she's the most phenomenal cook of my life. She just really taught me the soul and the passion to cooking. Jean-Georges taught me the simplicity of cooking. And Alain Ducasse taught me the respect for the ingredient be minimalist. Be a minimalist and really let the ingredient shine on its own.
We talked a little bit earlier about you're a chef that you're not scared to put a lot of combinations on the plate, but you have that ability to be cohesive with them.
Correct.
Which I've seen a lot of chefs, they put a lot of ingredients in the plate, but they can't quite pull them together.
Sure.
What do you use as the bridges to... I know you talked about flavour combinations. What else when you're constructing a dish?
Sure. I mean, that's a great question because I think, one, you have... Well, I don't think... Each ingredient, you have to respect the ingredient and let it shine on its own, but then there has to be bridges. You have to know how to gap those bridges. And a great way that I use that is, I mean, a lot of times... For me, it could be just like sweet components. Just a lot of times, people think if you add something sweet, that it means internally that it's sweet. But a lot of times, sweet is almost like a factor, like salt. It could be an enhancer, and it's a great like conduit to the flavor profiles.
Actually, I've been looking forward to interviewing an American chef because I've noticed on their plates there is a lot of sweet element, and I've always struggled to think, well, how is a dish not getting out of balance by that? And it's from my palate's probably more like European modern Australian, and we look at those combinations and we think, wow, that's nearly impossible for that dish to balance. But so it's quite interesting. So where do you think that sweet sort of element to the dishes has come from? What influence is that drawn from?
So I definitely think a lot, you know, specifically from Vietnam and Thailand. I think that's really where I saw sweetness really coming to the forefront. But I just look at something that has a sweet element like salt. I use sweet like salt to extract and enhance flavors and to bridge flavors.
That's very interesting. A recurring theme in a lot of my interviews is legacy and the importance of leaving legacy.
That's
great. It comes up with every chef I talk to, and because really without legacy, what is the point of it?
Sure.
Can you talk about what you'd like your legacy to be?
Sure. I mean, this is the most... Thank you for the question. It's the most paramount question. And it's a question that's been on my mind more recently in the last 6 months, is for me, yes, I'm a chef and I've been anointed and I love food. And for me, food is a conduit of a message. Food is a conduit of a global message for me. And that message is, you know, I came from a means of where if I didn't believe in myself, I wouldn't be sitting with you today in Sydney, Australia. I came from a very small, humble town. But I believed in myself and I believed in my vision for my life and my goals. And my legacy that I want to leave behind is how we as figures, we as parents, edify and speak empower our children and empower their dreams and empower their visions to live, to breathe life into them, to inspire them. And I think that's very important from a very early age.
That is, because we speak to a lot of chefs, and legacy sometimes is about how they influence young chefs, but that's even a more powerful message, really, because, I mean, that's going right back to the core of where it starts from.
Sure, 100%. Yeah, I think as a parent, as a public figure, being that source of inspiration is critical because words have power, thoughts have power, and just edifying and building, you know, positive reinforcement is critical.
Just lastly, what does the future hold for you, Angela?
I'm somebody that I believe, I believe in the present. I believe in the present. You know, the future is unwritten. The past we know, the past is history, but the present is the most important thing. So everything that I do within the moment is the most powerful thing. So I choose to live in the present.
Oh, I'd like to thank you for your time.
You're
and welcome to Australia.
We
do truly hope you enjoy it.
Thank you.
And we look forward to seeing you again down the track.
Thank you so much. Awesome
interview.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Pleasure.
Thank you.